Chapter 8. Max Hanley didn't need Holly's frantic cry to tell him a series of explosions had struck the Golden Dawn. He could see the bursts of white water erupting in sequence along the cruise ship's side on the Oregon's main monitor. It looked like she'd been struck by torpedoes, but he knew that was impossible. The radar scopes were clear, and sonar would have detected the launches. As the smoke cleared, Eric zoomed the low-light camera in on one of the damaged areas. The hole was easily big enough for a person to walk through, and seawater was cascading into the breach at a staggering rate. With four identical punctures along her waterline, there were too many compartments flooding to save the ship, especially without power going to her bilge pumps. He estimated that she would founder in less than an hour. Max tapped his communications console. "George, get your butt back in the Whirlybird and get over to the Dawn. A series of scuttling charges just went off, and our people are in trouble."
"Copy that," Gomez Adams replied instantly.
"Do you want me to land over there?"
"Negative.
Hover on standby and await further orders." Max changed channels. "Oregon to Cabrillo. Come in, Juan." Static filled the op center. Holly fine-tuned the transceiver, searching in vain for the chairman's signal, but he couldn't find it.
"Julia, are you there?"
"Eddie."
"I'm here," a voice suddenly boomed over the loudspeakers. It was Mark Murphy. He was still in the Golden Dawn's wheelhouse and had better reception.
"What just happened? It sounded like explosions."
"It was," Max replied. "Someone's trying to sink the ship, and from what we can tell over here, they're going to succeed."
"I've barely started on the downloads."
"Pack it in, son. Gomez is on his way to you. Hightail it out of there as soon as you can."
"What about Juan and the others?" Murph asked.
"Have you been able to reach them on the radio?"
"No.
Juan cut out about 20 minutes ago when he went down to the engine room." Hanley suppressed a curse. That was about the worst location to be when the explosives went off.
"What about Eddie and Hux?"
"They fell off the net a couple minutes later."
"I'll tell you one thing, Max. The radios in these suits are getting upgraded as soon as we're back."
"We'll worry about that when the time comes," Max said, although he'd been thinking the exact same thing.
He studied the image relayed to the monitor and saw that the Dawn was settling fast. Her lowest row of portholes was less than 3 feet from going under, and the ship had developed a slight list to starboard. If he sent Murph out to search for the rest of the team, there was a good chance the weapons specialist would become trapped in the vessel. She was sinking pretty evenly now, but he knew the ship could lurch downward at any second. He would just have to trust that the others would make their own way out.
"Mark," he called, "get aboard the chopper as soon as you're able. We'll have you stay on station, searching over the ship for when the rest reach the upper deck."
"Roger that, but I don't like it."
"Neither do I, lad. Neither do I."
After only a quick glance at a ship's schematic, Eddie Seng led Julia unerringly to the Golden Dawn's small hospital, located on level DD, well below the main deck. With his help, she had gathered blood and tissue samples from a number of victims on the way.
"You're holding up pretty well for someone who isn't a medico,"
Hux had told Eddie when she was working on the first of the victims.
"I've seen how Chinese interrogators leave their prisoners after extracting whatever information they think the person had," Eddie had said in an emotionless monotone. "After that, nothing much bothers me."
Julia knew of Seng's deep cover forays into China on behalf of the CIA and didn't doubt he'd seen horrors far worse than anything she could imagine. As she had suspected, there was a trail of bodies leading down the corridor toward the dispensary, men and women who had had just enough time after falling ill to go to the one place they thought they could find help. She took samples here as well, thinking that something in their physiology gave them a few minutes other victims had been denied by the pathogen. It could be an important clue at finding the cause of the outbreak, since she was holding little hope of finding any survivors. The hospital door was open when they arrived. She stepped over a man wearing a tuxedo lying across the threshold and entered the windowless antechamber. Her flashlight revealed a pair of desks and some storage cabinets. On the walls were travel posters, a sign reminding everyone that hand washing was a crucial step in reducing infections aboard ship, and a plaque stating that Dr. Howard Passman had received his medical degree from the University of Leeds. Julia played her light around the adjoining examination room and saw it was empty. A door at the far end of the office led to the patients' rooms, which were little more than curtained-off cubicles, each containing a bed and a simple nightstand. There were two more victims on the floor here, a young woman in a tight black dress and a middle-aged man wearing a bathrobe. Like all the rest, they were covered in their own blood.
"Think that's the doctor?" Eddie asked. "That would be my guess. He was probably struck by the virus in his cabin and rushed here as fast as he could."
"Not fast enough."
"For this bug, no one is."
Julia cocked her head.
"Do you hear that?"
"In this suit, I can't hear anything but my own breathing."
"Sounds like a pump or something."
She pulled back one of the curtains surrounding a bed. The blanket and sheets were crisp and flat. She went to the next. On the floor next to the bed was a battery-powered oxygen machine like those used by people with respiratory problems. The clear plastic lines snaked under the covers. Julia flashed her light over the bed. Someone was in it, with the blankets pulled up over their head. She rushed forward.
"We've got a live one."
Huxley peeled back the blankets. A young woman was sound asleep, the air tubes feeding directly into her nostrils. Her dark hair was fanned over the pillow, framing a face with pale, delicate features. She was bone-thin, with long arms and slender shoulders. Julia could see the outline of her clavicles through her T-shirt. Even in repose, she'd obviously gone through an ordeal that had taken its toll. Her eyes fluttered open, and she screamed when she saw the two figures in spacesuits hovering over her bed.
"It's okay," Julia said. "I'm a doctor. We're here to rescue you."
Julia's muffled voice did little to calm the woman. Her blue eyes were wide with fear, and she backed up against the headboard, drawing the blankets over herself.
"My name is Julia. This is Eddie. We are going to get you out of here. What's your name?"
Who are you?"
the young woman stammered.
"I'm a doctor from another ship. Do you know what happened?"
"Last night, there was a party."
When the woman didn't continue, Julia assumed that she was in shock. She turned to Seng.
"Break out another hazmat suit. We can't take her off the supplemental oxygen until she's in it."
"Why's that?" Eddie asked, tearing open the hazmat suit's plastic wrap.
"I think it's why she survived and no one else did. The virus must be airborne. She wasn't breathing the ambient air, but drawing oxygen from the hospital's O2 system. And when that went down, she started using this portable unit here."
Julia looked back at the girl. She estimated her age to be early 20s, either a passenger traveling with her family or a member of the crew.
"Can you tell me your name, sweetie?"
"Janneke. Janneke Dahl. My friends call me Janni."
"May I call you Janni?"
Julia asked, seating herself off the bed and holding the flashlight so Janni could see her face through her suit's faceplate. Janneke nodded.
"Good. My name is Julia."
"You are American?"
Just as Julia opened her mouth to respond, a deep bass sound filled the room.
"What was that?"
Eddie didn't have time to tell her it was an explosion before a second, closer blast echoed through the ship. Janneke screamed again and yanked the covers over her head.
"We have to go," Eddie said. "Now!"
Two more blasts rocked the Golden Dawn. One of them detonated a short distance from the ward, knocking Seng to the floor and forcing Julia to use her body to shield Janneke. A light fixture crashed from the ceiling, its fluorescent bulb shattering with a loud pop. Eddie got to his feet.
"Stay with the girl."
He ran from the room.
"Janni, it's okay. We'll get you out," Julia said, and drew down the blankets again.
Tears coursed down Janneke's smooth cheeks, and her lower lip quivered.
"What is happening?"
"My friend is checking it out. I need you to put this on."
Julia held out the protective hazmat suit.
"We have to do it very carefully, though, okay?"
"Am I sick?"
"I don't think so."
Julia had no idea until she could run some tests, but there was no way she was going to tell the frightened girl that.
I have asthma, Yanni told her. That's why I was here in the hospital. It was a bad attack that the doctor couldn't control.
Has it passed?
I think so. I have not used my inhaler since...
Her voice trailed off. But you stayed on the oxygen.
I saw what happened to Dr. Passman and to my friend Karen. I thought maybe it was something they had breathed, so I kept using it.
You are a brave and resourceful girl. I think you saved your life by doing that. Knowing she had done something to help herself gave Janneke a bit of confidence and hope that she would get off the ship alive. Eddie jogged back into the room. The blast wrecked the hallway about 20 yards from here. We can't go back up the way we came.
Is there another way?
We better hope so. I can hear the lower part of the ship flooding. Water surged under the jammed door like a rising tide, and if not for the protection of his hazmat suit, with its own air supply, Cabrillo would have drowned. After a few minutes struggling again to free his crushed prosthesis, he lay back and let the sea roar over him as it rapidly filled the main engine room. The swell was already a foot and a half deep and rising by the second. Juan's only consolation was that the rest of his team hadn't ventured this deep into the golden dawn and would be able to escape relatively easily. During his earlier examination of the engineering spaces, he hadn't seen any victims of the virus or whatever had been unleashed on the ship, telling him that the vessel had been running on automated mode, with just 2 men on the bridge and no one down here to monitor the power plants. With no one to infect, he wondered, how long would the pathogen remain in the air? Hux might have an idea, but this was a new virus even for her, so at best, she could make only a calculated guess. The air conditioners had been shut down for a while, letting dust and microbes settle. Had enough time elapsed? Cabrillo could only hope so, because he knew that by lying in the torrent of rising water and thinking about it, he was just putting off the inevitable. He worried his right arm free of his sleeve and snaked it down across his chest to his right leg. He took a handful of cloth from the bottom of his pants and yanked it upward over his artificial limb, giving him access to the straps that held it in place. With practiced fingers, he released the straps and popped the slight vacuum seal that held the leg to his stump. He felt an immediate measure of freedom after detaching the limb, although his suit remained pinned beneath the door. Now for the hard part. Juan reached over his shoulder to crank up the airflow in his suit and felt it balloon out against its seams. He carried 3 things on him at all times. One was a cigarette lighter, although all he smoked was an occasional cigar. The other 2 were a compass, no bigger than a button, and a folding knife. He pulled the knife from his pocket and opened the blade with 1 hand. He had to lie in a fetal position to reach as far down his pant leg as he could, fighting the weight of water still pouring in from under the door. The knife was as sharp as a scalpel and sliced through the protective hazmat suit with ease. Air began to gush from the slit, and for a moment was able to hold back the force of water trying to exploit the cut, but the suit soon began to fill. Juan worked faster, slicing through the material in a race to free himself before he was overwhelmed by the flood. He was lying on his side, and the water pressed against his face forced him to turn his head and try to raise himself a couple of inches without losing track of where he was cutting the suit. His new position was too awkward to allow him to work efficiently, so he took a deep breath and lay flat again, torquing the blade around his calf to keep cutting away the trapped suit material. His lungs screamed for air, but he ignored his body's needs, working with preternatural calm despite the danger. He tried yanking himself free, but the tough plastic cloth wouldn't tear. He tried again with the same results. Now he had to breathe, so he heaved himself upright to clear his helmet of water, but there was too much pressure. The helmet wouldn't drain. Cabrillo's lungs convulsed, allowing a trickle of bubbles to escape his lips. It was like suppressing a cough, and the corresponding pain in his chest was an unnecessary reminder that his brain was starving for oxygen. He was already becoming lightheaded. He pulled savagely at the suit and felt it tear slightly, but it wouldn't give completely. Juan tried to force himself to calm down, but survival instincts were overwhelming any sense of logic. He bent down yet again to work the knife, though this time he hacked at the suit in a frenzy, all the while pulling against it with his last bit of strength. Without warning, he tumbled back. Either he had completely cut away the boot portion of his suit, or it had ripped. He rolled onto his knees and pushed himself from the floor, feeling the water drain from the suit through the rent in its fabric. Fearful of exposing himself to anything, he allowed himself only a tiny sip of air, barely enough to clear the creeping shadows that filled his mind. He stood, letting the rest of the water that had filled his suit to sluice down his body and out. With seawater surging under the door, Juan couldn't stand steady on one leg, so he hopped a couple of feet to a workbench. Leaning against it, he quickly tied off the shredded remains of the suit, making the tightest knots he could. He dialed down the airflow when the suit became rigid. He was sure a little would leak through the cut, but with positive pressure on the inside, he didn't think anything could enter. In all, his exposure had been nominal, and having spent nearly all of his exposure time underwater, he was confident that he would be okay. That was until he remembered he was trapped in a sinking ship, with no way out and no way to communicate with his team or the Oregon. He groped blindly through the darkness with his hands held in front of him, using his sense of touch to locate his position within the cavernous engine room. Without his artificial leg, movement was clumsy and difficult, but he finally found another workbench he'd seen earlier. He opened drawers and felt around, identifying tools by feel until he found what he had hoped would be there. The flashlight wasn't as powerful as the one he'd lost, but its beam gave him a mental lift. At least now he wasn't blind. He hopped across the engine room, hampered by the rising floodwater that reached his knees. He passed the twin diesels and reached the far watertight door. This one was down securely. He searched for a manual release that would allow him to open it, but there was no such mechanism. He felt the first tentacles of panic tickling the back of his mind and crushed them down savagely. Not knowing the extent of damage done to the ship by the scuttling charges, he didn't know how long the Golden Dawn would stay afloat. If she remained stable like she was now, it would take a couple of hours for the engine room to fill, more than enough time to think up an alternative escape route, or for Eddie and the others to find a way to rescue him. No sooner had that thought occurred to him than a prolonged moan reverberated through the hull. A rending of metal pushed past its stress point. He physically felt the ship lurch toward the bow. The water in the engine room sloshed in a titanic wave that crashed against the far door. It rushed back, and Juan had to leap onto a table to keep from being crushed against a bulkhead. He shone his light across the room and could tell that the rate of water bubbling up from the forward part of the ship had doubled. Seawater fountained from under the door in angry geysers, as if the ocean was eager to claim its latest victim. Cabrillo's hours had just turned into minutes. He flashed the light around, looking for any way out of the sealed room. The seed of a crazy idea struck him, and he turned the beam to one of the massive engines and the ducts rising from it. The light slowly drifted upward, his eyes following. Aha! Julia turned to Janneke Dahl, keeping her voice as soothing as she could. Yanni, sweetheart, we have to get you out of here, but in order to do that, you need to put on a protective suit like the ones Eddie and I are wearing. The boat is sinking, she asked. Yes, it is. We have to go. Julia turned on the suit's battery-powered fans and scrubbers and unzipped the back. She didn't tell Yanni that the garment wasn't for her protection, but rather for the crew of the Oregon, in case she was already infected. Making sure to keep the air flowing through the tubes in her nose, Yanni slid her coltish legs into the hazmat suit and shrugged it over her narrow shoulders. Julia helped tuck her long hair into the helmet. Hux could tell it hadn't been washed in several days. Yannicka's asthma attack had kept her in the infirmary for a while. "Take a deep breath through your nose and hold it for as long as you can," she ordered. Yanni's chest expanded as she drew the pure oxygen into her lungs. Julia unhooked the cannula from around Yanni's ears and tossed the tubing aside. She pulled the two halves of the suit closed and zipped it up. It took her another minute to secure the seams with duct tape. Hux had to give Eddie Tseng credit. Despite the urgency, he showed not the slightest sign of impatience. He understood that the young woman was bordering on catatonic shock and needed to be treated as though she were a child. Considering what Yanni had been through, Julia thought she was doing fine. When Eddie had returned from his brief exploration, he'd taken a moment to drape sheets over the two bodies outside Yanni's cubicle. The girl still stared at the shrouded figures as Julia led her past. The three reached the hallway where nothing could have been done about the multitude of corpses. Julia felt Yanni's hand stiffen in hers, but to Yanni's credit, she stayed with them. In Hux's other hand, she carried her sample case. "That way is blocked," Eddie said, jerking a thumb in the direction they had come. "Yanni, is there another way to reach the main deck from here?"
"This hallway just stops."
She made sure to look him in the face so as not to stare at the dead.
"But there is a metal door at the end I have heard the crew use to work on something down below. Maybe there is a way out."
"Perfect," Eddie said. "Must be an auxiliary access hatch." Following the beam of his flashlight, they threaded their way down the corridor and, as Yanni had said, there was a large oval hatch embedded in the bare steel wall. Eddie undogged the lock and peered inside. He was confronted with a tangle of pipework that took him a moment to decipher.
"This is the pump room for the main swimming pool. The water is dropped down here for filtering, then sent back up."
The ship suddenly creaked as though her hull was splitting, and the Golden Dawn lurched, nearly knocking Yannicka to the floor. Julia steadied her as she and Eddie exchanged a glance. Time was running out. Eddie went through the open hatch and looked for another way out. There was a second hatch on the floor, surrounded by a metal railing. He dropped to a knee to free the locks and heaved the door open against its protesting hinges. A ladder dropped into the darkness. He descended as best he could, the hazmat suit making the narrow space difficult to negotiate. He was in another mechanical room ringed with electronics cabinets. It was a distribution node for the ship's electric supply and, normally, would have been buzzing with current. Now the room was silent. An open door gave way to another darkened hallway. "Come on down," he shouted, and waited at the base of the ladder to guide Yanni the last couple of rungs. Though Eddie was of below average height, he felt he could encircle the girl's waist with his hands, even with her suit bulking her up like a snowman. Julia descended a second later, and Eddie led them out of the room. He asked Yannicka, "Do you recognize where we are?"
"I'm not sure," she replied after peering into the gloom. "Many parts of the ship are off limits to the hotel staff, and I have not been on board for that long."
"It's okay," Eddie said reassuringly, sensing her frustration at not being more helpful. With the dawn settling bow first, Eddie turned aft. He could feel a slight strain in his thighs that was telling him he was climbing uphill. The angle was mild, but he knew it would grow steeper as more compartments flooded. Because of his suit, he never felt the breeze that suddenly came from behind him. It was the tremor in the deck plates below his feet that told him to turn. A wall of water barreled down the hallway at the level of his thighs, a solid green mass that struck them before he could shout a warning. Caught in the maelstrom, the trio was borne along the crest of the wave, tumbling helplessly until the swell's momentum slowly petered out. They were dropped to the deck, a tangle of limbs, as the sea continued to flow around them. Eddie was the first on his feet, and he helped Yanni stand. "Are you all right?"
"I think so."
"Doc, you okay?" he asked.
"Just a little rattled. What happened?"
"A bulkhead must have failed close to the bow and let the wave through. We still have some time." They continued on, sloshing through the ankle-deep water. Eddie checked the stencils on each of the doors they passed, hoping to find one marked stairwell, but luck wasn't with them. Down here were rooms for dry storage and storage for spare parts. An I-beam track along the ceiling allowed the crew to use winches to move heavy equipment from there to the nearest elevator. He thought that could make an alternate plan if they didn't find stairs. He had no doubt he could climb up an elevator shaft, Hux most likely too, but he didn't think Janneke had the strength. If not for the suit, maybe he could have her cling to his back while he made the ascent. It was something to consider. He almost missed a door to his right and had to stop to play the light across the stencil. Watercraft storage.
Bingo! What is it?
Our ticket out of here, Eddie said, and pushed open the door. By the light of his torch, he could see a line of gleaming jet skis and two-person runabout boats. They were resting on specially designed cradles. There was a large hole in the ceiling the boats could be lifted through and a set of circular stairs leading up to the next level. He climbed, with the others in tow. This was where passengers could rent one of the personal watercraft when the cruise ship was in port. There was a registration counter along one wall and posters everywhere with safety reminders. The floor was covered in a non-skid indoor-outdoor carpet, and on the outside bulkhead was a door sized like that of a suburban garage. A hydraulically controlled ramp was folded along the door's length. When the door was open and the ramp deployed, it would act as a small dock. Eddie tapped the steel door with the butt of his flashlight. Rather than return a sharp echo, it rang with a dull thud. He tried higher up and finally got the results he wanted. The ship's sunk to within 2 feet of the top of the door, he reported. When I open it, this room is going to flood.
Will we be able to get out?
Yanni asked breathlessly. No problem. Eddie smiled to reassure her. Once the inside and outside pressure equalize, we'll be able to swim away. And the beauty of it is, our suits will keep us afloat. I'll go downstairs and close off the door we came through, Julia said, understanding that in order for Eddie's plan to work, the boat garage had to be isolated from the rest of the ship, or water would just keep pouring in. Thanks, Eddie said. He positioned Janneke away from the door and up against a railing so she could hold on as the room flooded. The door was operated by a small electric winch, but had a mechanical handle to crank it up or down in case power was ever lost. When Hux returned and was standing next to Yanni to help hold her in place, Eddie bent and grabbed the handle. As soon as he put pressure on it, the door crept up a quarter inch and water started to enter the chamber in a flat rush. He was off to the side of the door, but could still feel water sweeping by his lower legs as he cranked it higher. The sea cascaded through the opening in the floor in a thundering waterfall. Eddie had the door a quarter of the way open when the handle jammed. He pulled on it harder but couldn't get it to budge. He looked at the door and saw what had happened. The force of water pressing against it had buckled the metal near the bottom and popped the guide wheels off their tracks. Even as he watched, the door distorted further, bending in the middle as though it was being shoved by a giant hand. He shouted a warning to Yanni and Julia that was lost in the roar of water as the door failed completely. It tore free from its mounts and was tossed across the room as though it were a piece of paper. Free of the constraint, the ocean exploded through the opening in a green wall. Julia and Yanni were far enough to the side to be spared the brunt of the onslaught, but as the room instantly filled, they were pummeled by the back surge of water. Had it not been for Hux's presence, Janneke Dahl would have been lost in the tumult. Shockwaves continued to reverberate through the water, sending debris, including a jet ski, floating dangerously by. It was only when the water settled that Eddie was able to let go of the stanchion he'd been clutching. He immediately started floating for the ceiling. Like a cat in reverse, he flipped himself around as he sailed upward to land on the roof on his hands and knees, his flashlight still gripped in his hand. He adjusted the airflow into the hazmat suit to reduce the pressure and thus his buoyancy. Otherwise, he'd remain stuck to the ceiling and immobilized. He worked the light to spot Julia and their young charge hanging onto a railing with their feet pointing up, the air in the suits ballooning the fabric around their legs. He crawled over to them and gently touched Hux's leg, urging her to let go and float free. She did and rose up to join him. He did the same for Yanni and turned down the airflow from the tanks. He started crawling across to the open door but felt Julia resisting his help. She tapped him on the shoulder and pressed her visor to his. "I lost the sample case," she shouted, the vibration of her voice transferring through the plastic so he could hear the words. "We have to find it." Eddie looked at the mass of clutter swirling inside the garage. Towels, life jackets, notebooks, bottles of sunscreen and water, coolers. It could take hours to find the case, and if it had been sucked back out the door, it was already falling to the sea floor, some 10,000 feet below the ship. "No time," he said back to her. "Eddie, we need those tissue samples." His answer was to take her hand and start toward the beckoning door. The sudden influx of water that swamped the boat garage had shifted the Golden Dawn's center of gravity, and the vessel began to list more heavily. The stresses on her hull were pushing to the breaking point, and deep along her keel, the steel began to tear. The sound of her death knell echoed over the ocean, as haunting as a whale song or funeral dirge. Julia and Eddie towed Yannicka through the opening. As soon as they were free of the ship, Eddie added air to his suit and shot for the surface. Nearby, the Oregon was ablaze with lights. Searchlights pierced the darkness and roamed across the Dawn's deck and along her waterline. The Zodiac inflatable that had been tied off near the garage bobbed nearby, its painter pulled taut and its bow submerged by the draw of the sinking cruise liner. As Eddie untied the line from an eye bolt welded to the ship's hull, one of the searchlights stabbing out from the Oregon swept past them and then returned, bathing them in a pool of incandescence. Julia and Yannicka waved furiously. The light blinked in acknowledgement. The Robinson helicopter swooped over from the far side of the cruise ship. George Adams held it steady over them long enough to see they were all right before moving off again to spare them the hurricane force of the rotor's downwash. Eddie rolled over the Zodiac's side and hoisted Julia and Yanni aboard. In seconds, he had the motor running and the little boat skipping across the waves toward the Oregon. The door over the tramp freighter's amidships boat garage was open, and a team in protective gear was standing by with spray bottles of concentrated bleach solution to decontaminate their suits. Eddie idled the Zodiac just off the ship. With the radios shorted by prolonged immersion in the water, he couldn't communicate with the orderlies, but everyone knew his duty. They threw over a couple of scrub brushes to the Zodiac and turned on the powerful jets of bleach. Eddie and Julia first scrubbed Yannicka and then each other, making certain every square inch of their hazmat suits had been decontaminated thoroughly. 6 inches of bleach sloshed across the Zodiac's floorboards before they were done. When Julia was satisfied they had killed any infection that might be clinging to the suits, she ripped away the duct tape over the zipper and freed herself of the claustrophobic garment. The warm, humid air was the freshest she'd ever tasted.
"God, that feels good."
"Amen to that," Eddie said, peeling off his suit and leaving it in the boat. He guided a still-suited Yannicka onto the Teflon-coated ramp they used to launch the SEAL assault boat. Julia took charge of her. She would take her down to the medical bay and run a battery of tests in the isolation ward to determine if the young woman was infected. Only then would Yanni be allowed to interact with the crew. Max Hanley arrived just as Eddie was preparing to sink the Zodiac. His face told Eddie that everything hadn't gone as well for the others as it had for him and Julia.
"What happened?"
"Mark is safe aboard the Robinson, but we lost contact with the chairman."
"Damn it. I'm going back. He's someplace in the engineering section."
"Look for yourself." Max pointed to the sinking cruise ship. When her keel had split, the volume of water flooding her hull had quadrupled.
"There isn't time."
"Max, it's the chairman, for God's sake."
"Don't you think I know that?"
Hanley had a tenuous grip on his emotions. Across the gulf of water, the golden dawn was in her final moments. The rows of portholes that ran along her length below her main deck were all submerged, and with her back broken, she was settling deeper in the middle than at her bow or stern. The two men watched silently as the ship continued to disappear. Air trapped within the hull started to vent explosively. Windows shattered and doors were torn from their hinges by the tremendous pressure. The sea washed over her railing and began to climb her upper decks amid erupting geysers of froth. From where they stood, it looked as though the golden dawn was surrounded by boiling water. When the ocean reached the level of the dawn's bridge, it shattered the tempered glass. Debris started floating free of the hulk. Deck chairs mostly, but one of her lifeboats had also broken free of its davits and drifted away upside down. Max wiped at his eyes when the top of the bridge vanished and all that remained above the water were the ship's communications masts and her funnel. Gushes of air roiled the surface as the sea consumed more and more of the vessel. Eric Stone was in the op center, controlling the searchlights from the weapons station. He left the ship's most powerful light focused on the Dawn's smokestack, outlining the gold coins painted on it. The sea bubbled like a thermal hot spring while the Robinson hovered overhead. Max whispered Juan's name and crossed himself when the top of the funnel was a foot from disappearing completely. A blast of air suddenly belched from the stack, ejecting a yellow object as if from a cannon. It rose 20 feet, flapping in the air like a bird trying to take flight.
Holy sh—
He couldn't believe what he was seeing. The yellow object was one of their biohazard suits, and the flapping was Cabrillo's arms windmilling and his legs bicycling. Juan's trajectory carried him from the smokestack and over the railing before he crashed back into the sea. The impact must have stunned him, because he lay still for a couple of seconds before starting to swim away from the sinking vessel. Eric tracked him with the searchlight as Juan swam to the overturned lifeboat. He heaved himself onto its back, faced the Oregon on his knees, and made a deep, theatrical bow. Eric saluted him with a blast from the ship's horn.